Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bottom Line Me podcast. I'm your host, Ann Allard. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Well, the holidays are here, and I think we all can agree that they're a time of joy and relaxation. But in our business, they can also be a time when we become more susceptible to distractions that can result in sometimes lack of judgment or lapses in judgment. These moments of vulnerability are precisely when scammers and fraudsters like to strike and attempt to deceive us with fraudulent communications or fraudulent wiring instructions. So joining me today to talk about this important subject is Brian Gartley. Brian is a vice president and the West Virginia state manager, and Brian often speaks on real estate fraud and how to prevent it, or talks a lot about cybersecurity. So, Brian, welcome to the Bottom Line Me podcast. Thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, happy to be here. This is exciting.
Awesome. Great. Well, before we dive into our topic, could you take a couple moments and just tell our audience a little bit about yourself, what you do at Old Republic?
Well, I am in West Virginia. Born and raised here, had the pleasure of getting to stay here in West Virginia because of being in the title insurance business. And I went to Marshall University, graduated in 1996, and met a guy that said, "Hey, come and get in the title insurance business." And I'm like, "What's that?" And he said, "All you got to do is take attorneys to lunch and dinner and play golf." And I was like, "Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal." So after graduating in 1996, got into the title business. Then later on in 2010, also for Marshall, I went and got my MBA. And have done a whole bunch of things in the title business since I've been here, working primarily for two underwriters, but with Old Republic for the last 20 years, doing everything from auditing to signing title agents up to doing trainings to helping agents grow their business to speaking at West Virginia Attorney Real Estate Division conferences. So a little bit of everything. And now I spend a lot of time kind of managing what we have, as well as going forward and doing trainings and educating agents, particularly spending a lot of time educating agents about cybercrime nowadays.
Well, it's certainly top of mind for everyone.
It is.
This is a time of year, as I was saying, that we become a little bit more susceptible, and fraudsters and all the bad actors kind of count on the fact that we are distracted. So I'm really excited to have this conversation with you and to have you share some ideas and thoughts with our audience. So let's start first with maybe understanding the threat. So could you perhaps share some common tactics that scammers or fraudsters use to target closing professionals, particularly during the holiday season, and why it tends to be a more vulnerable time for everybody?
Well, every day is busy. Holidays are busier than normal. A couple things happen during the holidays. Number one, we're distracted. We have lots of things going on. What Christmas party do I have to go to, or what holiday event do I have to go to? So we're not maybe paying as much attention as why I think fraudsters target this time. But fraudsters have become very adept at understanding what's going on, and that if they are successful, the amount of time period that a person has to recover is 28, 48 hours. And if your lending institution where the money was originated from goes to the wrong place and they're closed because it's a holiday, that is a little bit more time that they have and more likely to get away with events. So again, I would just couple a couple things. We're hurried. We're not thinking about events that are going on, the day-to-day event, we're not paying as much attention. Oh, that seemed odd, but maybe it's not really odd. But, you know, also in transactions around the holidays in today's time period, in today's world that we live in, everybody's like, "I've got to get this done on Monday," because I'm going to be leaving on a holiday vacation. So there's pressures from that are legitimate pressures from everywhere. And there are opportunities that the fraudsters are aware of, and they take advantage of that. But the primary reason it's around the holidays is because the length of time that a lending institution may be closed, that extra day, helps them get away with it versus getting into an active recovery event.
Important to, that's, I hadn't even thought of that. But let's talk about warning signs and red flags. Are there any specific warning signs or that you might recommend that people really kind of stay on high alert around, or any red flags they should really focus in on, particularly when they are really busy or distracted?
It's really, it's a whole hodgepodge of things. The scam, the fraudster scam, the event that occurs really comes down to a primary event. We know statistically, because we've started tracking this information, the FBI tracks it, that almost $12.5 billion in 2023 was really stolen, associated with fraud events, $12.5 billion with a B. And that was in 2023. Every year prior to 2023, that number has grown by almost 50% each year. And all of this is associated with what we see in our business, what we see in the personal event is two things. One is what we call the phishing scheme. And then more targeted below the phishing scheme is the business email compromise. We just went through a chaotic political season. And if you did not get an opportunity to be hacked every day on your cell phone, then you may be doing the right thing. And what I mean by that is there are people out there who are fishing. And when you think about fishing, you say, what is that? Well, it's like, I'm going to throw my line into the water and I'm going to sit here and I'm going to wait. And I'm going to see if somebody, if a fish takes the bait. The bait could be all kinds of different things. Usually it's associated with something that's a scare tactic. So the fishing technique, the red flag, if you will, to pay attention to is the A, we're the IRS and there's something wrong. You owe us something. You need to respond. Or it is seemingly something that comes in from your own bank. And your bank says, there's been a challenge to your account. Click this link or call this number. When you click this link or call this number, you're giving them, then they ask, well, give me, you know, to verify, give me your social security number, give me all this kind of stuff. And so that targeting event is a big red flag. Almost every text that you get that has a link in it is suspicious, in my opinion. Almost every opportunity that you get an email that is from an unsolicited person, you have no idea where it came from. And then, so that's where the phishing happens. We're trying to get personal information, your credit card number, your social security number, your birth date. That's where the big scheme is. The smaller scheme then becomes the business email compromise, which is targeted. We've identified you may be somebody we want to target as a fraudster. And as we identify you as the person we want to target as a fraudster, we're going to begin to phish. We're going to send you an email. The email is, we have a big deal, needs to close before the end of the year. The that says, click on this link to open up a title order. Click on the link to open up the title order. Maybe nothing happens. Maybe something does happen. That link that from an unsolicited person is where we often get hit in our industry. That allows the person, the fraudster, to sit in the middle of the transaction. We call that the man in the middle situation, where they're able to monitor now what's going on. they just are sitting back there. They're in your network. They can see what's going on. And then when it comes time to fund a transaction, that's when they jump in. That's when you get an email that looks legitimate from the loan officer or from the seller or from the realtor that says, oh, you know what? I'm going to change my wire instructions and I want you to go here. Holiday season, we're all hurried. Everything looks legit and whoop, you send that to the wrong place. 3-day holiday event, no time to recover. So the big red flags that are out there are being aware of unsolicited email, being aware of something that just doesn't feel right, being aware of the person trying to get your personal information. Recognize that in today's world, personal information is kind of crazy. So we all want to be on Facebook or Instagram or something like that. We put identifiers out there as to who we are. Think about what most Facebook pages have in the about situation. They have your name. If you're a female, they have your maiden name because you want everybody to know your maiden name, hash, married name, if you change your name, in your Facebook page so you can connect with your high school friends. They know where you work. Most people identify where they work. Most people want a happy birthday message from somebody, so they put their birthday on the Facebook. Somebody just casually looking for that information brings it all in. Oh, they work for a title company. That's where the money is in real estate. And so then we get these personal phishing events. I know a little bit about you, and I'm sending you something. Doesn't look exactly right, but it is the opportunity for them to get in. Those are the red flags you have to pay attention to, is what in the world, where in the world did this come from? Why am I getting this deal? Or why all of a sudden am I changing the wire instructions that's completely different than what I started with or what I understood where I needed to send the money?
Are there any newer trends, or do you have any real life example of something recently that happened? Because I think sometimes stories are the best way for us to, you know, educate ourselves around these things. Most of us think, well, you know, it happened to you, but it probably won't happen to me. But I've heard over and over again, it's not a matter of is it going to happen? It's when is it going to happen?
Yeah, the numbers are staggering. So when you really start looking at this, there are more business email compromise events that occur every day than there are people in the world, which means we're being hit multiple times, multiple ways. And the numbers are in the 8 to 10 billion email attacks, basically over the course of a year, that are going on. Most of us have computer software that stops that from coming in. But the big events are really what's happening. So 3 years ago, we were really worried about what's called the spoofed email. The spoofed email was the misdirection of the wire going out, meaning the realtor got hacked, the lender got hacked, your email got hacked. Those were the big things that we worried about. And we created systems to try to stop that from happening. The big thing that occurs now in today's world is that I'm more concerned with is the misrepresentation, fraudulent seller impersonation events. So, give you an example of one that we thwarted, and that was the way these work, fraudulent seller impersonation events, is seller says, I'm going to contact a realtor. Realtor sends a purchase sale agreement to the closes to the title company and says, hey, I need you to do title work on this. The realtor is real. The seller has identified a piece of property, whether it's vacant land or even has a house on it today, but it's generally an unencumbered piece of property. And the unencumbered piece of property is that they identify, okay, I'm going to do this. They send an email to a local realtor. Realtor says, great, writes up a purchase-sell agreement. There's no verification of who's selling that. And then the compromise continues in that they don't want to come to closing. They do not, red flag, they do not want to be do anything except sign documents by a DocuSign. So they create the email, they send it to whatever, and we get a purchase-sell agreement signed by the seller and the buyer. We then facilitate a closing, and this was an event we had, actually. We facilitated the closing, we wire the money out, and when we wire the money out, we get a telephone call from the seller 3 days later. I don't have my money. We think it is that old scheme, the business email compromise scheme, that somebody's email got hacked and we misdirected the wire. We go to our bank. Our bank says, no, we wired it to here. We call the receiving bank. We receive the wire. It's on hold. They won't give us any more information than that. What we discover is that, hold up, these people who spend the money for this piece of property had a deed. We consummated the closing. It was signed by this person. And we start looking at it and discover that the real person who owns the property actually lives in Ireland. But through further investigation, through the fraudster of the identifying on Facebook who owned the property, they stepped in their place, executed everything. Now, did we look for ID? Yes, they had a passport. We didn't do any verification on the number at the bottom that the passport picture actually belonged to the person. So we could change the name on the passport. That is one example of where we're seeing things that are even more difficult to stop, because it's not the business email compromise event. It's somebody who's initiating the transaction, which means every email that you get from them is a real email. It's not a compromised or a spoof email. So that's the biggest thing I'm worried about right now, is the fraudulent seller event. We're seeing horrendous things that occur with that. Just to conclude that story, we lost the money. The people had an owner's title insurance policy. We had to pay them for the entire money that they put down, because the deed that they received when we consummated the transaction was closed. Now, similarly, same county, a couple months later, people want to do the same thing. And we now know, when we kind of set up protocols, this isn't going to work. We're not going to accommodate a notary event in this situation. Because what's going on? When we do the verification and we look and we find the identification, we had people who were driver's license in the state of Washington and passports certified in Costa Rica, with a realtor out of Florida trying to do a transaction in West Virginia. It just didn't make sense. And we said, fine, you guys live in Costa Rica. That's great. Go to the consulate is the only way we're going to do this. So we had to go and do it like the old school, which they never did. So those are the big things that are happening that just are out there every day. If we have time, I've got, you know, one more story of kind of the man in the middle event, horrific event.
Yes, I'm all ears.
Okay, so I do a transaction. We have a buyer and we have a seller. The seller comes in and selling their house, $470,000. We do the closing transaction. We don't realize anything is wrong. Seller gets an email 45 days after they sold the house from his bank. Hey, for some reason, we haven't got your automated payment for your house payment. Seller says, I sold that house. You should have gotten a check to pay that off. Go to the title company, closing attorney. Here's where we sent it. The interesting thing in that situation is, for whatever reason, the receiving, the bank that had the payoff, the fraudster had got to be a man in the middle. So they had compromised somebody's system. They'd watched the transaction go through. They went and identified now what the wiring instructions for the true payoff was. And yet they created a brand new account with the receiving bank. So when the check comes in, it went to the right bank. It had the right amount for the payoff. But instead of getting directed to the payoff department, it got directed to this person's, the fraudster's individual account. And you say, well, how does a bank do that? Well, they didn't know. That just came in. Here's my account number. The account number was basically the same. They changed the name. And in the final wire instructions, they changed the name to be a different name than what the payoff entity was. Same bank. So instead of going to a bank payoff department, it went to a bank individual account. That the fraudster manipulated the wire instructions. We don't know that that happened. The bank doesn't know that their property's being sold. Sure, they gave a payoff letter, but they're not tracking that. We have what we believe is a legitimate payoff wire to event. And now we're 45 days after that, and we've got $469,000 that didn't go for a payoff in a purchase situation where the new buyer is sitting there not really owning the property.
Wow. It leads me to think that the minute you sell your home and the mortgage is paid off, you better call your bank right away and make sure they got the money. Jeepers.
Wow. Yeah, there's no ifs, ands, or buts or easy ways around this. At the end of the day, we've got to not trust, distrust, but verify almost every interaction that we're doing with this. I mean, remember, there's $3 trillion that's happening in real estate transactions in the United States annually. If you look at one half of 1% of that, it's an amazing opportunity for these fraudsters to do this. And if we're not being diligent with our personal information about how we're doing things, our personal information leads to where we work. And the fraudsters are tracking that to get to where we work because they know where the money is. It's in law firms. It's in title companies. It's dealing with realtors and what they're doing here, there, and everywhere. And you got to be diligent to paying attention to all of this stuff to distrust and then verify. Where we used to be in a world where you trust and verify. It's almost you got to be cautious of everything that's going on. And yes, in that situation, you need to call your bank 10 days as a best practice 10 days later after you do your refinance or purchase sale event, that you call them and say, I just want to verify that my loan is paid off.
Any other best practices that you can share with us to prevent some of these things or to keep us diligent and particularly around this time of year?
My most significant diligence is that we in the title industry are probably going to have to drag our clients into a world that they don't like to be in. And what I mean by that is almost every closing software out there that a title company uses gives you the ability to establish a secure portal communication with the people that are part of the transaction, with the lender, with the realtor, with the seller, with the buyer. If there's another title company on the seller's side, you need to begin utilizing that portal communication so that you control who's in the transaction versus it just floating amorphously out there in unencrypted emails. Realtors don't like to log in. It's an extra step. Lenders don't like to log in. It's an extra step. We as title companies don't like it when the lender makes us log into their portal. But that system is the most secure opportunity, best practice, I believe, that exists in our industry today. The second best practice is you really got to identify that you have good cyber insurance. And most malpractice cyber insurance have very significant exclusions. So in that case I mentioned to you as to the law firm that sent the money to the wrong account, their cyber E&O carrier says, yep, we agree that was a cyber event. However, you didn't read this exclusion that says we don't cover anything dispersed from your escrow account to benefit your clients. So they have no coverage for that event. Getting hooked up with companies that do this every day that have some level of insurance, companies like Certified, companies like Closing Lock, these companies do have legitimate insurance when something occurs. And you need to make sure you have that. So best practice, use your portal, develop a portal, have a secure communication with everybody you're doing business with, and then have somebody who's going to help you verify information as it comes in. On the front end, because we've never paid attention to the front end before with identity verification, and on the back end, we need to verify, have somebody who's helping us verify the wires and where the wires are going.
Awesome. You know, the phrase seller impersonation didn't exist 10 years ago, I don't think, or even 5 years ago. And now it makes my head want to explode every time I hear it. And it's just getting worse and worse. Well, Brian, this has been really a great conversation. I'm sure everyone that's tuning in will have some takeaway. Do you have any, as you know, we like to get the bottom line on our podcast. Do you have a bottom line on this topic that you'd like to share before we finish up?
My bottom line is, if you're not reading and paying attention to what's going on in cybercrime and reflecting on it and having self-awareness as to how it might impact your operation, you're probably going to have to pay a lot of money in the future. It's about information. You got to know it, because the fraudsters are above you every day. They're three steps ahead of us.
Well, I would say that is really a really good piece of advice for our bottom line today. So, Brian, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your taking the time to talk with us today. I hope you have a wonderful holiday season, free of any issues. And to our audience, I just like to say thank you to all of you for joining us in today. And until we meet again, let's all keep learning, growing, and prospering. Thanks again.